What's up? It's Draymond Green, back for my 14th NBA season and the new season of my podcast, The Draymond Green Show. Unfiltered takes, real hoop talk, and big-time guests. There's no holding back on the court or on the mic. Follow The Draymond Green Show wherever you get your podcasts.
There's a new analysis that was published last week by the Journal of American Medical Association Oncology relative to a projected increase in missed screenings for breast, lung, and colorectal cancer as a result of changes in the Medicaid system. And here to discuss that with us is Dr. Kevin Callison, Associate Professor, Program Director in Health Policy and Management at Tulane University. Doc, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
So I read this article, and I really had a difficult time getting my head around of what exactly they were saying of what change was going to cause what here. Mm-hmm. Your thoughts?
Well, I think there are two specific changes that they're looking at that are coming to Medicaid. One is the work requirements. So there are going to be new requirements for Medicaid enrollees, for certain Medicaid enrollees, that they have to prove that they've worked or engaged in community activities, volunteering, or are in school in order to maintain their Medicaid benefits. So that is going to be something new that's starting in about a year or so. The second thing they're looking at is the more frequent redetermination of Medicaid eligibility. So typically, people who receive Medicaid coverage, once a year they have to renew their coverage. That is going to become more frequent with the new policy changes, so that at least twice a year, maybe more often in some states, Medicaid beneficiaries are going to have to renew their benefits. So the article is looking at those two changes and saying that those two changes are going to result in people losing Medicaid coverage, which will then in turn lead to lower screening rates.
So what about, has there ever been, I tried finding one, an analysis of those, and there's a large group of what I call near Medicaid recipient folks. Mm-hmm. The economic strata that they fall in is just outside of qualifying for Medicaid benefits. They work. Do we know what their rate of of cancer screenings are, and are they significantly less, more, or do we know?
Well, what this study did was it compared people who were covered by Medicaid. It took their screening rates and compared them to the screening rates for people who were uninsured. And so that's where they come up with these estimates of screening losses. So it's not necessarily by comparing people on Medicaid to those who are earning just above the Medicaid threshold, but instead comparing people on Medicaid to people who are uninsured.
But if you're uninsured, in many cases, you probably have a higher rate of being unemployed, right? And if you're going to use work as being a contributing factor, why wouldn't you use a sector of the population of near Medicaid recipients, because you know they're working, they have income, and that's why they're not qualifying, to compare to that group? And that's what kind of confused me, that the control factor here doesn't seem to be an appropriate one.
Well, I think I guess a couple of things there. One is that most of the evidence we have suggests that work requirements in Medicaid, or even in the SNAP program, the food stamp program, there's really no good evidence that those work requirements lead to additional employment for people that are exposed to those requirements. So it's not necessarily the case that we would expect people who are subject to work requirements in Medicaid to all of a sudden go out and get a job because they need that job to maintain their Medicaid coverage. And so in that case, I think probably from the author's perspective, it made more sense to think that, well, what is the likely outcome for someone who's going to be exposed to a Medicaid work requirement is that they're going to lose their Medicaid coverage, not necessarily get a job, but then become uninsured. My guess would be that was what the authors had in mind.
Right, but we know that what's been skewed, as you just pointed out, is the fact that there hasn't been strict rules around eligibility. In fact, they had some states that haven't done an eligibility audit in years.
Well, that was true during the COVID period, but that since about mid-2023, all states have begun resuming redeterminations in Medicaid.
What's up? It's Draymond Green, back for my 14th NBA season and the new season of my podcast, The Draymond Green Show. Unfiltered takes, real hoop talk, and big-time guests. There's no holding back on the court or on the mic. Follow The Draymond Green Show wherever you get your podcasts.
Well, we think, because there are a number of states that are refusing to hand over the information to the federal government, to the USDA right now, actually on the food stamp program, so they don't really know what has actually been done from an internal audit or internal control perspective as it relates to eligibility. And that was just another factor that, you know, kind of confused me as to how we reach these conclusions. So what's the alternative? I mean, you know, when we think about this thing, we know that, you know, there's going to be an impact. I mean, we saw an increase in the number of screenings that were done and folks as it related to Medicaid expansion. Of all the Medicaid expansion states, we increased cancer screenings from about 58.8% to 62.4%. So just under 4%, about 3.5% increase, right?
Yeah.
In screening, still a pretty abysmal number when you think about it, right?
Yeah, I mean, certainly below the optimal level of screening, but that's true for people who have commercial insurance as well. I mean, you know, people who are commercially insured have higher rates of screening, but they're still not near the optimal rate.
Well, and you are about to make my point. So what is the end game here? I mean, you know, as in Louisiana, roughly the 69% of Medicaid adults work.
Right.
Either part-time or full-time. And, you know, we have about 31% that are not working in the state. How do we square up with what you're seeing nationally?
So I think that in terms of the work requirements, most of the evidence, and I will admit that the evidence is limited in Medicaid because we only have two states that have ever tried to implement work requirements in Medicaid, Arkansas and Georgia. But the evidence from those two states suggests that work requirements do lead to substantial loss of Medicaid coverage. And it's not necessarily because people aren't working and so they lose their Medicaid benefits. It's because the reporting requirements, the verification requirements, lead to eligible people losing their coverage. So Arkansas is a good example of this. And Arkansas is actually the state that the authors used in that study to model coverage loss for the rest of the country, because Arkansas implemented work requirements in their Medicaid population, and within 6 months, almost 20,000 people lost coverage, and a federal judge stepped in and stopped the work requirements in Arkansas. So I think we know that work requirements are likely to lead to coverage loss in Medicaid. Now, maybe you quibble with the numbers in the study because, you know, they're applying the Arkansas experience to every state in the country. They're doing some other things with assuming that the population that's going to lose coverage has the same age distribution as the full population and therefore should have the same screening rates as the full population. Like, I think you could quibble with a couple of those things, but I do think we know that work requirements are going to lead to loss of coverage. And then we have, you know, pretty strong evidence, which you mentioned, that when you gain insurance coverage, screening rates go up. When you lose insurance coverage, screening rates go down. So, you know, I don't know how much faith I'd put in the exact numbers that the study comes up with, but I think they're right that we're likely to see coverage loss, and we're likely to see, as a result of that, fewer cancer screenings.
But again, what is the alternative? I mean, how much further along can we go as it relates to what this is actually costing the U.S. taxpayer? I mean, it's kind of easy to identify the problem, but what is the ultimate solution going to be? And I just wanted to make one other observation about Arkansas. So there was an analysis done of Social Security benefits and what it required in information and filling out of information in order to get Social Security. And what they found was, as it related to these SNAP benefits, it was no more onerous than Social Security, but the rates of compliance with Social Security far greater than what it was with SNAP. So I'm not exactly sure that I agree with that premise either. There's something else going on here. I'm not exactly sure what it is, but it can't be that, you know, you would have a compliance rate much greater with Social Security than you would with SNAP.
Yeah, well, to the first part of your question about the alternative, I think one way to consider it is, you know, it's not, I certainly don't think it's unreasonable to think that people who are able-bodied, you know, should work to receive some of these benefits. Like, I don't think most people think that's necessarily unreasonable. I think the question comes in when you start asking, okay, well, once there's a cost to implementing these work requirements, and that cost is you have to monitor and verify whether people are meeting the requirements. And from the evidence we have, again, which is limited, we know that it's very expensive to do that. So Georgia has spent a lot of money, more money than they've saved, certainly, by trying to implement these work requirements. And there are states that now are contracting with companies like Equifax to provide data on who's working, how much they're earning. And those contracts are on the order of $15 to $20 million a year. So these, you know, it's a lot of money that states are spending to build these verification systems. And one of the questions you can ask is, you know, is it worth it in terms of the money that's going to be saved? Now, you know, I think so. One alternative then is to do that calculation and say, does it really save us money by implementing these work requirements? And I think it probably does, not because aren't meeting the work requirements are losing coverage, but I think it's because, to your second point, that when we add these administrative barriers that require people to prove their income, that then we know that eligible people lose coverage as a result of that. So I would say that, you know, in terms of what the alternative is, one alternative is that it might just be cheaper to, you know, to just maintain the status quo that we have and not implement work requirements. But we'll see. I mean, that's a discussion that I think more research will be done as states start rolling these things out.
Well, you know, I hear that argument about compliance all the time. I mean, you're an expert in health policy and management. I don't know of an industry that has more compliance costs than healthcare. Do you? not aware of one.
No. And I mean, it's just expensive to do these sorts of verification. There are, you know, there are consultants that make a lot of money off building these systems for states and verifying the data. And so, you know, again, I think it's I think it's reasonable to want people who can work or are able to work. But I think the question of whether that actually saves money is still up for debate.
Yeah. And, you know, I would love to find out what commercially insured individuals and the rate of their cancer screenings are, even if you have. I mean, because a lot of this is based on one's own perception of their health and what they're willing to do, mm-hmm. how much of a inconvenience they want to go through to get it. Do cancer screenings today are not real easy. And it doesn't matter if you're Medicare, Medicaid, or commercial insurance. I mean, try to set an appointment for a doctor.
you know, outside of work hours. it's really challenging. But despite that, I mean, it is clear that people with commercial insurance do have higher compliance rates.
Yeah,
because of the insurance or whether it's because of, you know, other factors that are driving that. It could be either of those things. But, you know,
no doubt.
There's a cost factor there as well.
Yeah. Well, Doc, thank you so much for joining us. Kevin Callison, Associate Professor, Program Director in Health Policy and Management at Tulane University. Truly appreciate your time and your insight.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you, sir. We'll be right back. 504-260-1870 on the Oakland Heart Jewelers Talk and Text Line. Stay with us.
It's Draymond Green kicking off my 14th NBA season and the new season of my podcast. And trust me, I'm not holding back. Listen to the Draymond Green Show wherever you get your podcasts.